case this morning is Sharon Klein v. OPM, 2021-1770. Ms. Moorhead, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Bridget Moorhead, and I am here on behalf of Sharon Klein, the petitioner in this matter. This appeal involves former spouse survivor benefits under 5 U.S.C. 8341. A little bit of change of pace from the earlier cases that you've been hearing. There is significant evidence in the record at the time of the divorce to find that Mr. Klein intended to provide a survivor benefit to Sharon Klein in the divorce order. And the timing here is significant. The marital settlement agreement that became part of the divorce order was signed in 1987. And at that time, there was a survivor election in force that had been in force for the entire 33 years of Mr. Klein's Postal Service career. Then in 1989, there was a retirement survivor benefit election when Mr. Klein retired in 1989. And at that time, even though in contemplation of a divorce, he did elect a full survivor benefit for Ms. Klein. And then in 1991, the divorce order was signed. So in addition to these ongoing elected survivor benefits, there was also the language of the grant of benefits that's in the marital settlement agreement. Under Fox, there has to be a pertinent clause. And in the grant, which I believe is a pertinent clause that grants survivor benefits, which is on page 11 of our brief, and then in the marital settlement agreement, which is appendix 123 through 131, which provides the marital settlement agreement. The language is that the parties agree that there is a community interest in the husband's retirement plan through his employment by the U.S. Postal Service. Upon husband's retirement, the U.S. Postal Service shall pay directly to wife each month so long as the wife shall remain living, one half of any such monthly retirement benefits to which husband is entitled.
But that doesn't provide for a survivor annuity. That provides for retirement benefits, which are different.
I understand the difference, Your Honor, and the basis for it is this is a retirement plan. And if you look at the retirement election on page 137 to 140, it includes survivor benefits. In addition, the so long as the wife shall remain living is a lifetime benefit that is consistent with language that was allowed to provide a survivor benefit, and several cases have so held, before the 1993 change in the statute. And if you look
well,
at that
I guess statute, this is, I'm sorry to interrupt, this is Judge Prost, and I think I'm having the same, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay.
Are you having trouble hearing me?
No, I can hear you. I think I'm having the same problem that Judge Lurie is having construing this language. Granted, so long as the wife shall remain living, if you just look at that part of it, it could arguably, in the right context, speak to survivors as well as retirement. But if you read that phrase in the context, clearly this context of benefits that are at issue in this sentence is clearly just dealing with the monthly annuity that the husband is getting, and the wife is getting half of that as long as she lives. And there's no other context. If you read it in the context, that's the beginning and end of its applicability. Isn't that a fair reading?
I think that could be a fair reading, Your Honor, but I think that there are other ways to read that, and partly because even though the survivor word isn't included in there, if you look at the definition of a survivor, it is anyone who remains living after the death of. So the key word it is remain living. I agree with you. Had this said, so long as the husband shall remain living, that would have been the clearest way to write this. And I agree that it's not the most artfully written.
But they're talking about.
But the language that I have a problem with is the language at the very end of that sentence, which says any such monthly retirement benefits to which the husband is entitled. the husband is not entitled to survivor benefits after his own death, right? So a reference to the benefits to which he is entitled seems to me to be, by its terms, limited to the monthly payments while during his life. Isn't that the compelled reading of that language?
That is true, but if you look at the Thomas case, there was no mention of the word survivor in that grant in the marital settlement agreement. And the court found that because there was an existing election of survivor benefits, which was definitely in place at the time this marital settlement agreement was drafted, that there's existing benefits, and I really do believe that even though it says retirement benefits, and I do, Your Honor, understand the difference between retirement benefits and survivor benefits, that this provision is more general, relating more to a retirement plan, which is set forth in the retirement document that Mr. Klein signed that included a survival election.
But what do you do with that language to which the husband is entitled? How is that consistent with survivor benefits?
Well, the survivor, it's true, you can't receive benefits when you're dead.
Right.
I agree with that. But also, you can't get around the fact that the wife receives benefits as long as she's living.
So if she predeceases him, her benefits cease, which is what it would seem that is that clause is directed to, right?
Yes, I would agree with you that he's entitled, but I do, again, think that the retirement plan includes those survivor benefits. I mean, he selects those. Those are all part of his entire retirement plan. And so he is giving that benefit. I mean, it is a benefit to him for his work at the Postal Service. It does go to the surviving wife, but it is all part of his retirement plan.
There's also a letter, March 30th, 1998, from Mr. Klein saying the purpose of this is to place my current spouse, that's the second wife, on full annuity benefits. That plays into the picture too, doesn't it?
Well, I don't believe it plays into the picture with respect to the divorce order because the evidence has to be contemporaneous at the time of the divorce order. When that letter is written, its circumstances have changed. He's obviously married a second wife and has an interest in protecting her. But that letter wasn't in existence at the time the marital settlement agreement was drafted. So I do not believe it weighs in at all on the interpretation of the marital settlement agreement and the grant of survivor benefits.
And OPM was not a party to the marital settlement agreement, correct?
Absolutely not. That's the marital settlement agreement that's part of the divorce order, different from the settlement agreement that I will turn to in a few minutes. So, Your Honor, when you ask that question, you're referring to the marital settlement agreement as part of the divorce, or the settlement agreement during this proceeding?
Well, I see it was part of the order of the Superior Court. Why don't you proceed as you intend?
And I just wanted to direct the court, too, on this issue of the settlement order is if you look at 5 CFR 838.803B. This was a provision that in this statute changed or militated the language that had to be in a divorce order after 1993. All of this transpired before 1993. And that language, there were several language here that were suggested that would be acceptable before 1993, that wouldn't be acceptable after 1993. And those provisions are very similar. That the former spouse will continue to receive benefits for his or her lifetime, or that benefits will continue after the death of, and I would argue that the while you remain living takes into consideration that to remain living means that somebody has died. And that even though there's no listing of survivor annuity, death benefit, or former spouse annuity in the grant, in the marital settlement agreement, that the court could still find that there was a grant of survivor benefits. And again, I mentioned there were survivor benefits that were in place at the time all of this was taking place, both pre-existing and then continuing with the retirement election. So I want to just switch gears. The other basis for this, and, you know, regardless of what the court would find on the interpretation of the divorce order and the marital settlement agreement, during these proceedings and before the administrative court ruled, the parties, the real parties in interest, both spouses, entered into a settlement agreement, and that's found on Appendix 249 to 250. Throughout the whole proceeding, there was an incredible amount of pressure put on me and OPM, but mostly me, to try to settle this case. I've been a litigator for almost 30 years, and always the goal is to try to settle if you can save judicial resources. So I worked with the second spouse, and we were able to come to a settlement agreement. The only reason that, the only way she would do it, though, is if OPM admitted the payments, and that was mostly because of the tax liability. The second spouse is a relatively wealthy woman, and she did not want an additional tax liability for getting the entire amount of the payments and then paying Sharon Klein half of the benefits that she was receiving. And the other issue, too, is the...
Wait. So what was the deal? So let me understand what the deal was. So your client would receive all of the payments and bear the tax liability for that, and then your client would give half of it to the other side without incurring a tax liability? Is that what the deal was predicated on? I'm not understanding it.
It's the reverse, actually, because the second spouse is currently receiving the survivor benefits. And so the agreement was, you know, she's getting them now, but if she just privately paid my client half of what she was getting, she would incur the tax liability on the entire amount. And that was something that she could not agree to do, which I understood. And so it was a very important term of the settlement agreement that OPM would issue the two checks just like they've been doing before Mr. Klein died, when they issued the retirement benefits and split them. So that was the nature of the agreement. And the administrative court was very happy that the parties had reached an agreement, but OPM just refused to participate in any of the settlement discussions. I mean, you can see from the agreement that OPM is not a party. I saw this, and in talking to the administrative judge, that this was more administrative to administer, just to make the payments. I mean, OPM does not really have a dog in this fight, so to speak, in the sense that they would pay off these benefits fully to somebody, either to the second spouse or my client, the former spouse.
Well, they have to pay, but they have a legal obligation to only pay out benefits to one who is legally entitled to those benefits. Right? I mean, they do have that obligation, right?
They absolutely do have that obligation, and they are meeting that obligation to the second spouse, you know, notwithstanding the arguments that I'm making here. But the issue is that if the administrative judge is going to ask us to settle, and I mean, when this discussion came up, OPM's counsel said, oh, you know, the administrative judges, they just say that. It's totally illusory. You know, there's no way to settle this. And maybe I misunderstood, but there's been no authority cited, either by the administrative judge in the underlying proceeding or by the government in this appeal, that states why the parties can't settle, and why OPM cannot, you know, as an administrative function, issue two checks. So,
well, this ship may have sailed, but I can't understand why it wouldn't have been a fairly simple matter for the second Mrs. Klein, upon getting the full check, to have given an amount of money to the first Mrs. Klein that would have reduced that amount by the amount of extra tax that the second Mrs. Klein had to pay. And therefore, it's a wash. Everybody comes out in the same position they would be if each of them was getting half of the money. Why wouldn't that be a simple way to solve the problem?
Well, because
without involving OPM. OPM just sends one check. You send it to the second Mrs. Klein. The second Mrs. Klein splits the money, takes the incremental tax that she would have had to pay out of the check that she sends to the first Mrs. Klein.
That was a term of the agreement to which only the second Mrs. Klein would agree to. She would not agree to issue a check. I mean, you can understand that these two women do not really want to have anything to do with each other. Over this, I mean, practically speaking, and so that was the terms of the settlement agreement. And, you know, we had hoped that, we really thought that this was the fairest resolution, and both spouses agreed to it. But for the fact that the second Mrs. Klein would not agree to just accept all of the money from OPM and then pay out half of it herself, it needed to be administered by OPM.
Counsel, your time has been consumed, plus we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal time, and let's hear from the government at this point.
Thank you, Honor.
Good morning, Ms. Murphy.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court? Your Honor, the question presented by this appeal, as you know, is whether petitioner Sharon Klein is entitled to survivor's benefits for her deceased ex-husband who remarried and elected to have his new wife placed on full benefits. After a careful review of the evidence, the MSPB properly determined that Mrs. Klein is not entitled to a survivor's annuity for her late husband, and substantial evidence supports the MSPB's decision. I think the Court has well covered the marital settlement agreement and why it doesn't provide for a survivor's annuity, but I wanted to give the Court one additional citation or reference to help with that decision, and that is a letter from OPM found at Appendix 136 through 137. That letter was sent to Mr. Klein at the point where Mrs. Klein, the first Mrs. Klein, began to receive the retirement annuity, and it made clear that the annuity would cease upon Mr. Klein's death. Further support that the annuity was indeed a retirement annuity, distinct from survivor's annuity, and intended to end at Mr. Klein's death.
Can I just ask you an aside question, because I'm really not sure how this works? Mm-hmm. If you have a survivor's annuity coming at the end of the game, that reduces your retirement annuity by a certain portion, correct?
It reduces your annuity overall, yes, Your Honor.
Yes. So under this retirement plan, the first Mrs. Klein was getting half of the retirement, but that her half was reduced because there was payment all of these years that goes to the survivor annuity portion.
Well, Mr. Klein, I'm not 100% sure, Your Honor, how that works administratively. But what I can tell you is that the election for retirement annuity was for the first Mrs. Klein. The other 50%...
No, all I'm saying is that, I mean, I just want to understand. I think survivors, you start paying it. I mean, the money, a portion of your retirement benefits are reduced by, I don't know, I have no idea what the amount would be if
right.
you elect to do a survivor's annuity at the end of the game.
Right, but I argue that Mr. Klein's portion was then decreased.
It looks like they're each going to get
the same.
Half. So
right.
It seems to, I mean, this may be neither here nor there in terms of the legal ramifications. Maybe it's just a question of kind of, but it seems to me that it's quite clear that she was getting her half of it under this retirement plan would have been reduced, as his half was, by a payment into the survivor's annuity portion.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm just curious. Do you assume that's correct, too? Or you don't
know? I assume that's correct, Your Honor, but I don't know. What I do know, though, is that it was clear, even from this letter, when her retirement annuity kicked in 1995, I believe, that what she would receive would pay until Mr. Klein's death. He was only eligible, as we pointed out in the marital settlement agreement, to give to her retirement annuity until his death. Once he passed away, it then kicked into survivor's annuity, which, as the court has referenced, he intended for his retirement annuity or his survivor's annuity to go to his second wife, pursuant to the letter he sent to OPM.
What about this change that your friend referred to, and we've seen it come up in other cases, when the regime changed?
Yes.
And the government required more specificity. And this, I think you agree, this preceded that.
It did. It preceded that. But even the regulations before 1993 made clear that this language, sort of so long as you should live or forever, was not enough standing alone to grant a former spouse a survivor's annuity if the agreement, like the marital settlement agreement here, didn't also contain language like death benefit or survivor's annuity. And here, as we know, the marital settlement agreement did not contain such language. It only referred to a retirement plan. So even under the pre-1993 regulations, and that would be back then at OPM 5 CFR 838J, that language, for so long as you shall live, was not enough standing alone to grant a survivor's annuity if there was not also language, death benefits, some language that referred to benefits that you receive when someone deceases. So that language alone wouldn't cut it, Your Honor. And with respect to the settlement agreement, I wanted to bring your attention to that as well. And since that came up earlier in the argument, OPM is prohibited, as you mentioned, Judge Prost, from paying out proceeds except in accordance with law. So OPM could not administer or facilitate a private settlement agreement between the two Mrs. Kleins. It has to pay out in accordance with law, and here is operating with an election that Mr. Klein made before he passed that those survivor's benefits go to the second Mrs. Klein, Miss Elizabeth Klein.
But the government doesn't have a dog in the fight if the parties independently reach a settlement and divvy the money up, as long as, obviously, well, the IRS has a dog in that fight, but be that as it may.
But that is correct, Your Honor. And OPM said that. We can't administer this agreement. OPM did not object to the settlement agreement, but for the fact that it could not administer such agreement. It could only pay in accordance with law, so it could only pay the second Mrs. Klein, Miss Elizabeth Klein, who was entitled to receive the survivor's annuity.
Was she an intervener here at some point?
So she intervened in the second MSPB appeal, Your Honor, and then here she was served with a copy of the petition for review but did not appear. So if the court doesn't have any further questions, I ask you to respectfully affirm the decision of the Merit System Protection Board, which was based on substantial evidence.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I would like a short rebuttal.
You will have up to 2 minutes for rebuttal, Ms. Moorhead.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I just wanted to refer back to the letter that she pointed out, the 1995 letter. I mean, that's not dispositive. I mean, if the court finds that the interpretation, the OPM's interpretation of the marital settlement agreement grant is wrong. I mean, all of the cases look at what the language is. And so the fact that OPM issued that letter saying that it ended upon the death is not dispositive, because there's no interpretation, no court interpretation of that language. I would agree with Your Honor with regard to the one half reduced. There's no question that my client's half was reduced, and not just for a short period of time. It was for the entire 33 years of his professional career, which ended actually before the divorce. And then there was an election that was still in force because of the notice issue. So the government has conceded on the notice issue. I don't believe that's an issue before the court. So that retirement election in 1989 continued in force because the notice was deficient. So then she continued to get, even for another 10 years, her retirement that was reduced for purposes of the survivor benefit. And it was always a maximum retirement benefit. So even 10 years after, we're talking about 43 years of survivor election that she had during that whole period of time. I don't think there's any question that had Mr. Klein died during that time, even after the divorce, that retirement election would still be in force. So based on all of the arguments before, And especially with respect to the grant in the marital settlement agreement, we would ask the court to grant survivor benefits to Sharon Klein going back to 2016, or enforce the settlement agreement between the two wives.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate both arguments, and the case is submitted.